Hi, it's Sierra Miller. I can't wait for you to check out my new collection of shoes and accessories at Designer Shoe Warehouse. If you love shoes as much as I do, then trust me, I got you. From cute sneakerinas to the perfect flip-flops to stunning heels, these shoes are all style, no drama. It's a girl's girl summer, and DSW has just the shoes. Shop the Sierra Miller collection right now at your DSW store or DSW.com.
She described it as a soft life podcast, and I thought, I don't think I've ever given soft life.
More and More is about learning more about people and who they are beyond the surface.
I truly believe that we are the sum of many parts and more than just the box that society tends to place us in.
So welcome to the pod, Les Alfred.
Thank you for having me.
I'm having a chance to interview someone who's usually the interviewer.
If you don't tell your story, someone else will, and they're going to get it wrong.
She founded the iconic Balanced Black Girl platform, amassed millions of downloads, and has nominated for an NAACP Image Award.
I wanted to have a life where I could be a coffee shop person. Oh, yeah. And I was like...
But recently, she did something brave, moving away from a title that defined her for years to explore a new narrative.
These top agencies for creators who reject me because they don't know what to do with me.
Did you feel like you had to outgrow the Balanced label or that you had outgrown it?
I just wanted to make sure that my audience still felt supported.
I love that.
There's not any podcast, self-help book, YouTube video that can replace having that dog in you.
From the sidelines to the boardroom, the stage to the startup, everyone has a story beyond their thing. Welcome to More and More Podcast. My name is Tisha Williams Flynn.
Today we're interviewing the interviewer. We're talking about the pressure of wellness, the reality of body dysmorphia in the fitness industry, and why she decided that being balanced wasn't the end of her story. So welcome to the pod, Les Alfred. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
Me too. I'm excited for this conversation today. So we're going to start in talking about the evolution of the brand and what we're kind of titling the rebrand for you. Balanced Black Girl was a very successful podcast, and it's a testament to your hard work and the journey here. We've talked about it. You had that for 7 years, or you started 7 years ago. But in 2025, you rebranded to She's So Lucky, and that feels like a massive identity shift and very intentional. Did you feel like you had to outgrow the Balanced label or that you had outgrown it? And was there a part of you that felt confined by having to be a poster child for wellness?
Most definitely. My journey as a creator and relationship with the word balance started a bit over a decade ago. I was working in corporate and I was also teaching fitness classes on the side because I thought that my life's work and passion was actually going to be around fitness.
Okay.
I was in my early 20s. I was in my first corporate job. I absolutely hated it. But the one part of the day that I always looked forward to was my morning workouts. So naturally, in my mind, I thought that meant I needed to be a fitness instructor.
Sure.
So I pursued that as a bit of a side hustle to my corporate job at the time. And I became obsessed with reading wellness blogs because none of my friends were interested in any of that stuff. They did not care. They were like, girl, we don't care about your recipes. We don't care about your workouts. So I was reading these wellness blogs written by other women who shared the same interests as me. And that sent me down this whole rabbit hole of content creation and the internet world. And after a few years of reading these blogs, I was like, I could do that. I had a communications background. I'd become a personal trainer. I'd become a fitness instructor. For a while, I'd actually gone back to school to study nutrition and was going to be a dietitian, but decided not to pursue that path. So I was like, I feel like I can talk about this well. And so I started a blog called The Balance Berry over a decade ago. And The Balance Berry didn't actually mean anything. I just liked alliteration. I was like, oh, balance. What other word starts with B? Berry. People always thought like my name was Berry. No. I had gotten to this point where I started relying on fitness and wellness a little too heavily. I'd gotten a little too obsessed with it. I was working out a little too hard. I was getting a little too obsessive with my food. And so I started leaning into this idea of balance to say, what can it look like to care about my health without going fully overboard? And so the root of me talking about balance on the internet was really from that place. Mm-hmm. But as time went on, my relationship with myself became healthier. My relationship with wellness and fitness and my body became healthier. Mm. I didn't feel like I needed to rely on that label or that reminder of balance as much as I needed to in my 20s.
Yeah. Yeah. That, I love that. You said so many things that resonated with me. I mean, I feel like when I was in my 20s and, you know, working in corporate America, I was definitely the friend that like did Pilates twice a day, like morning class, evening class, you know, cycling, like all the things. And, you know, looking back on it, I don't think it was balanced because I was probably becoming, had become a bit obsessive around like the fitness aspect of it. So I think it is important just to like figure out a way to incorporate it as a part of our life and our well-being, but not be so like obsessive about it. Because I think that's easy to do, especially here, I think in New York too.
Definitely.
So, no, I love that.
It's this desire to have a sense of control. Mm-hmm. You know, I felt like I was just so out of control. I'd been going down this path that I didn't want to be in, but felt stuck in.
Yeah.
I felt like I didn't have much control over the people I was around in my job. And now looking back on it, I did, but I didn't understand that. So I was like, well, I can control this one thing, so I'm going to hold on to it for dear life.
Yeah, yeah. Especially to your point, when in corporate, at work, like there wasn't much that you could control. So that gave you that sense of control in that part of your life.
Exactly.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. So you spend your days dissecting other women's successes. After hundreds of episodes, I think I your last podcast episode I listened to, I think you're at 350. Did I hear that?
Close to it? Yeah, yeah, somewhere around there.
Yeah, you're.
I'm losing count.
No, that's amazing. That's amazing. So you're at approximately 350 episodes. What is the one common thread that you see in happy women that is completely missing in the women that may not be deemed as successful?
They don't ask for permission. Mm. They're not asking for permission, and they're also not asking to be given an answer. Mm. I think sometimes when people feel stuck, they think, oh, there's just one thing. And if I can just get this one person, if Les can tell me her secret tip, if Tisha can tell me her secret tip, and then I can be just like them.
Yeah.
And I think the women that are in a space of feeling a bit more empowered or who have maybe gotten to milestones that are important to them, they're not looking for someone outside of them to tell them what to do.
Yeah.
They're taking action, whether it's messy, whether it's imperfect, to create what it is they want to see in their lives.
Yep. So you made me think of, and tying this back to fitness, so I love Peloton. I'm a huge Peloton person. And one of my favorite instructors says, validation is for parking. And so, you know, you're not asking, you know, you're not looking for validation from other people, right? Like you're going with what you feel like you need to do and what's going to make you happy.
No, exactly. So, I had a video I posted on TikTok and Instagram recently that ended up going viral. Basically, I just said, there's not any podcast, self-help book, YouTube video that can replace having that dog in you, that can replace that inner drive, that inner desire and motivation to get to where you want to be. Those things can be great tools, but they're actually only effective if you already have that fire within you to apply them.
Yeah. Yep. It's so true. It's so true. On this show, we talk a lot about women being more than their last success. Was it terrifying to walk away from a brand name that was associated with your NAACP recognition? And how did you know that it was time to shed that skin?
You know, I didn't necessarily feel scared of changing the brand. I just wanted to make sure that my audience still felt supported and that they knew that, like, we're all going into the next phase of what I'm doing together. Okay. That was my biggest concern.
Okay.
But I actually felt very empowered and I felt very confident about the decision because I felt like it was time. Mm. When I first started the podcast, that was when I was still very heavily in the wellness space. And so if people want to go back into the archives of Balanced Black Girl, I was talking to lots of doctors and therapists and specialists, and we would do these hour-long deep dives on mental health and maternal health and gut health and all of these really great topics, but it was very wellness-driven.
Okay.
And about 4 years into the show, I started expanding the topics a little bit. We started talking about money and we started talking about friendships and self-help and entrepreneurship. And when I started expanding those topics, that was actually when the show began to flourish and thrive. And that was what people responded to more so than like the hour-long deep dives on gut health.
Right.
And so for me, rebranding the show wasn't necessarily shedding an identity. The show's content had already evolved. It was more so about repackaging the show to better reflect what it had become about.
Yeah. Well, and it also sounds like you were listening to your audience and, you shifted and changed with the way that your audience was shifting and changing, which is good and empowering, right? Like, you didn't feel like you had to be stuck in this place because that's where you started, but you felt free enough to say, okay, we're going to move in this way. And then who knows where the next iteration of that might go. So I think that's awesome.
Yeah. I actually, last night I was going through the comments on my latest episode and somebody responded, "This was exactly what I needed to hear. Thank you for knowing your audience to a T." And I'm like, that is the best possible comment I could get.
Yeah, that is, because who else are you doing it for? Mm-hmm. Like, you're putting this out there for people, and if they're not getting anything from it, then, that kind of defeats the purpose. So
yeah, exactly.
That's great. You've gotten to sit down with so many amazing guests. If you were to Frankenstein the three insights you have gotten from those guests and apply it to your life as a way to fast track the life that you're building, what's the advice and who gave it?
Ooh. Okay, first one, this was off the record of the podcast, but when I first started Balanced Black Girl, we also had a book club component to it. And the very first book that we read was Becoming by Michelle Obama. Okay. And then we ended up getting to sit down with Michelle Obama and have a private book club with her as part of her tour. And one of the things that she said to me when I asked her, why was it so important for her to write her memoir and to have her story out there in her own words, was she said, if you don't tell your story, someone else will, and they're going to get it wrong. Mm-hmm. Like, in the absence of information, people will connect the dots on their own, and they're usually going to connect it incorrectly.
Yep.
And it was really about the power of owning your narrative, using your voice, and telling your own story to ensure that it's told correctly.
Yep.
So that was one that's always stuck with me. Mm-hmm. I wish we could have put that on the podcast, but it was, its own thing. I'll have her back on the podcast for real one day.
Yes, yes,
and we'll get to hash it up again.
I love that.
Another one, this is an episode I did about 2 years ago, but I recently re-aired it. I sat down with Tricia Lee, who's a real estate broker. She's also on Owning Manhattan. We've actually recorded two episodes together now. But in our first conversation, she talked a lot about the importance of knowing who you are and knowing what your unique advantages are. And so, she has this expression where she's not playing fair because she is so leaned into her unique greatness and knowing who she is and what she brings to the table, that when she fully embodies that, it's almost like not fair for the competition because she is so uniquely her and in her gifts, which is a really good one.
Yeah.
And then the third, last year on the show, I had Gabrielle Union, which was a really great episode. And she shared a really vulnerable moment where she had publicly changed her mind on some stances that she had. And I think that was so important because oftentimes people will want you to stay in a box that you've always been in. And we're always changing. We're always evolving. With life experience, we do change our mind. And maybe how we felt one day is different than how we feel with more lived experience. And I think when we have more space to have the freedom to say, hey, actually, I used to think that and I was wrong. And now with new information, I have this other perspective.
Yeah.
The more that we have conversations where we're openly able to say, you know what, I changed my mind. Or you know what, now with new information, I would have a different stance on that. I think it gives us all a little bit more freedom and flexibility to not feel so pigeonholed to things that we once said or believed.
Yeah. So you seldom have male guests on. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious if that has been a conscious decision or just coincidence. So can you talk to us about, how do you think about, your audience and the guests that you have on? And what does it offer to have a medium that is not just not male-centered, but distinctly female-centered?
I mean, the podcast space is still predominantly so male.
Mm-hmm.
The voices that are highlighted in podcasting, if you look at the top podcasts every year, the shows that get the most downloads, a lot of it is still very much male voices that are being featured constantly. Mm. So from my perspective, we hear a lot of what men have to say in the podcast space, and I don't think that I'm taking anything away from any of them by not really featuring men very often. And also, I think some of it is subconscious, where I like to sit down with people that I admire and am excited to talk to and am excited to learn from. And 98% of the time that happens to be Black women. It just does.
Yeah.
Subconsciously, yeah. You know.
Yeah. I mean, listen, when we talked about this podcast, we kind of talked about the feel of it wanting to feel like two friends mm-hmm. just having a conversation on a couch, and we just happen to have cameras around us. Yeah. And so those settings are typically amongst women and especially amongst Black women. So that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. So we're very aligned there. So the last 365 days have been an absolute dumpster fire. I keep saying 2025 was like the ghetto.
It definitely was.
For many of us who follow politics, and I think you can feel it in people's overall morale. Offering luck by the hour feels so valuable and timely right now. Do you feel the weight of being a beacon in that way? Do you think about it in that way?
I haven't ever thought about it that way. I'm like, oh, the pressure is getting worse. I haven't thought about it that way. I do hope that I can lead by example in some ways, because I think knowing my background, I don't come from a whole lot. Mm-hmm. I have a really loving, supportive family structure, which I'm very grateful for. But like, my mom had me at 17 mm-hmm. years old, and did not know what the heck right. they were going to do with a kid, you know what
sure,
I mean? And so
sure.
in a lot of ways, I was a first gen in a lot of ways, in terms of being a first gen college student and first gen, you know, corporate in the way that I have been, first gen entrepreneur. And even though I'm nowhere near where I want to be, the fact that I've gotten this far
sure.
from my origins is like,
yeah,
it's a real testament to what
absolutely.
Is possible.
Absolutely.
And so I more so don't like to think of myself as a beacon. I think that's a bit too much of a pedestal, because I'm still very human in all of the ways. But I do like to be an example of what could be possible.
Mm-hmm.
For so many of the things that I've done, I am not special in any way.
Yeah.
I'm just willing to try and just willing to just keep trying.
Yeah.
And so if that gives someone else hope to keep trying, then I'm honored to be that.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, the fact that you're just willing to keep trying is like more than what most people do or will do. And we were just talking about this before we started. On your last podcast episode, you had spoken about the importance of not shrinking ourselves and visibility and being comfortable with visibility, not just for ourselves, but that visibility serving, being of service to other people. And so I think just seeing you trying, seeing you doing these things is being in service of other people that are trying to figure it out, that might have similar stories to you, or trying to think of, you know, how can I find my own way? So thank you for doing that, being that voice. And actually, thank you personally for that nugget of the visibility piece.
Good, I'm glad it resonated.
It absolutely did. I'm excited about this next question because I saw you post this on Threads, and I immediately thought this speaks to our podcast more and more, and really was anxious to get you on the show. So you said on Threads, I need to be much more clear and vocal about my personal brand positioning, because what people think it is and what I want to be are two entirely different things. And that's on me to better distinguish. Talk to us about that a little bit more, and what the difference is between your personal brand positioning and how it's different from your podcast.
So that thread was inspired by a post that I'd seen on TikTok, where a really nice young woman had posted a slideshow of podcasts that she really liked and wrote a little description of each mm-hmm. of them. And she included my show, but she described it as a soft life podcast.
Mm.
And I thought, huh, I don't think I've ever given soft life.
Mm.
And if I have, that's not what I'm, that's not my message.
Right.
At least from my understanding of quote unquote soft life,
right.
as it's often discussed on the internet.
Right.
My perception of soft life, when I see people talk about it on the internet, is a bit rooted in material.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost as if having this financial source outside of yourself mm-hmm. that provides a nice soft life so that you can have lots of nice material things. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Right, right.
I'm
if that's
all
your reality.
About the girlies
yeah.
having whatever it is they want to have. But that's not what I talk about, at least
right.
to me.
Right.
I think that there can be elements of life that absolutely need softness. I don't want anybody having like a hard life. But so much of the messaging that I put out there is more so for the people who want a very extraordinary life and are willing to do what it takes mm. to get it.
Mm-hmm. Like not putting the work in
yes,
to do
not
it.
Not saying that everybody has to do that because mm-hmm. they don't. But if you do want to do that, then my content is a good place to get inspired yeah. for that. Yeah. And so it just made me realize that I can be so much more clear about what my mission is, what it is I'm here to do, who it is I'm here to serve, and what people can expect to get from whatever I share, whether that is the podcast, whether that is my threads mm-hmm. or Instagram or Substack or whatever it is. That is what I talk about, and yeah. that is the message that I'm here to put out there.
Yeah. What I appreciated in your post was that where you said it's on me to better distinguish that. And it actually goes back to the conversation you had with Michelle Obama about it being on all of us to tell our own stories, right? So people will think whatever they want to, but it's on us ultimately to tell the story, to distinguish those things. And so it's taking ownership instead of just letting people continue to think what they want to think.
Exactly. I'm like, oh, there's an opportunity for clarity here. Yeah. And that clarity, as the leader, it has to come from me.
Yep. It's about you, right? So it has to, you're the only person that can clarify that. Mm-hmm. So you've talked a bit about shifting to Substack. And we're in this period of the death of the influencer and people craving more authenticity and intentionality. What's your approach to thought leadership in 2026 and beyond? And I think I also saw in threads, because you posted, you know, where your kind of primary places are going to be, where you're going to exchange or provide content, and some of your secondaries. So what are your thoughts on that approach?
While I think I do get put in the influencer sphere, people would probably describe me as an influencer. Mm-hmm. Say Les is an influencer. I follow mm-hmm. her on Instagram. She is an influencer. Mm-hmm. Looking at where the influencer industry has gone, I'm actually a really bad one. And I have had a lot of come to Jesus moments realizing what my strengths are and what it is people really come to me for. Mm-hmm. People actually don't come to me for a link to an outfit. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They don't come to me to buy XYZ. Mm-hmm. They come to me for inspiration. They come to me because they think that my thoughts are interesting. They come to me because they like the way that I speak and they like the way that I relay information. Mm-hmm. I'm very much someone who people come to as kind of more of an information influencer, right. not a buy XYZ right. influencer.
Right.
And as far as the traditional influencer industry goes, that industry is the buy XYZ from me influencer. Mm-hmm. And for a long time, I very much tried to fit in that mold. And I realized that it just wasn't me.
Right.
I'm just not super interested in that. And there's nothing wrong with influencing people to buy things. So many women that I admire and respect are so Absolutely. Good at it.
Absolutely.
But when I think about what my gifts are, I'm a better speaker. Mm-hmm. I am a better writer. Mm-hmm. I am better at helping people think of things differently
right.
and uncover different perspectives. Mm-hmm. And I really want to lean more into that.
Yeah.
And so my priority in 2026 moving forward is leaning into what are my unique gifts? What can I offer somebody that no one else can?
Yeah.
And that's really my words and my thoughts.
Yeah, I love that. Well, number one, I think you could do both because all to what you said, but then this whole outfit, I think you could like give some links and encourage and influence people in that way. But I think it's so important to understand what each of us uniquely brings to the table and not try to do the same thing that everyone else is doing. Because that I think that's what the noise is. And so I think we break out when we're just being true to who we are and understanding like, you know what, that's great, but that's not for me, but this is where I live and this is where I, you know, where I can offer something to you.
Yeah. And I've had a lot of moments of rejection too over the past few years that have been a little bit challenging where I've met with so many of these top agencies for creators who reject me because they don't know what to do with me because they're very good at monetizing off of those people who are really great at having the LTKs and getting people to buy the things and getting, and it's like, well, for me, this blazer, I got it at the thrift store and these boots I've had for 6 years. So I don't have a link that I can give people because that's just not how I consume things and how I move through the world.
Right.
I'm not somebody who you can put in the influencer machine and get, you know, something out of. And so I've had a lot of really tough rejections that made me question my worth in some ways. But then I'm like, just because I can't necessarily get someone to click a link and buy something from Sephora, I have people in my DMs constantly giving paragraphs of ways that I have change their lives yeah. from ways that I've helped them believe in themselves. Yeah. And that's harder to monetize and it's harder to measure, but it doesn't make it any less important.
And it's the impact of that.
Yeah.
I mean, is I think it's more important than, you know, buying a pair of shoes. But what you're doing is creating space for that. Like you're creating that space of like, okay, we can live in this, you know, other area. So thank you for creating the space for those of us that aren't necessarily like the traditional influencers, but have other things to offer in different ways. And again, I'm always about the impact of it.
Yeah. Thank you.
You've mentioned your parents are incredibly affirming and your mom taught you to have a strong sense of self. When you were in the thick of social media and the comments or even the pressure of your own goals and the things that we put on ourselves, what is the specific voice of your mom that you hear in your head bringing you back to center?
You know, a lot of people use the term like girl's girl, which I don't always love because sometimes the ways people use it, I'm like, what are we talking about? But I think the way that term was intended, my mom is a true girl's girl. Mm. My mom is somebody who has always really prioritized friendships and relationships with other women. I have a gaggle of aunties. I have never in all of my 30 and some change years of life heard my mom compare herself to another woman, put another woman down to make herself feel better. And like, my mom is a baddie and she just owns that and yeah. just knows that she's great.
I
and is also the first person to like compliment another woman and tell her how great she is or how pretty she is or whatever, and still know that she's still
yeah.
a baddie.
It doesn't take away from her
at all.
Yeah.
So I think having that example mm-hmm. my whole life has been so helpful because the internet is noisy. It yeah. is a place of comparison or where people can project things. And I think I have been so privileged to have had such a great role model in that way, and in a way where I was very much raised to believe in my good qualities as they were, and it didn't have to have anything to do with other people.
Yeah.
I didn't have to hear they're jealous of you or other people are this. It was more so about you are you, that is great. You are smart, you are capable, you yeah. are this, and it has nothing to do with other
yeah.
people.
And yeah.
I'm so grateful to have that foundation because it has served me so much.
Yeah, you know, you can't underestimate the importance of like your upbringing, whether it's your parents or you had, you know, other guardians, and those voices that kind of stick with you as you move through the world as we grow older. Like it's a blessing. And so I love that for you. I am sure your mom is a baddie. I'm not, that doesn't even surprise me. So I kind of want to meet her because yeah. I'm like.
Next time she comes to town.
Yeah, I would love that. I would love that. You started as a personal trainer, but you've been open about dealing with body dysmorphic episodes while working in that space. It's such a paradox, but being the expert on the body while battling your own relationship with it. And we talked a little bit about, you know, the obsessiveness of it and what that can bring. How did you navigate leading others to health when you were struggling to see yourself clearly?
It was difficult because it was almost the opposite. It was, I didn't really have many body dysmorphic thoughts until I entered into fitness. And anybody who has been maybe like a personal trainer or a hairstylist or something, you know, where you have kind of an intimate relationship with clients in terms of proximity, where they feel very comfortable and they're openly telling you things that like maybe they shouldn't, but they feel comfortable, you know, almost in a way treating you like a pseudo therapist. When you are working with people day in and day out, and particularly women, and a lot of women have body things around body image
right.
for various different reasons,
right.
when you're working with someone in a fitness capacity, that's going to come up. And so day in and day out, when you're working with clients who are either complaining about their bodies or have these body dysmorphic things or point out perceived flaws, and I'm like, I didn't even know that was a flaw. I didn't know what a hip dip was until, I don't know, I heard a client complaining about it, and then they're complaining about having like back fat, but I'm like, your back kind of looks like mine, so do I have, you know what I mean?
Gosh.
It was more so like being a personal trainer caused that in,
it was almost causing like you to internalize
my
some
clients
of that.
Were almost negatively influencing
yeah.
me ultimately, which is why I had to walk away from it
wow.
because I couldn't figure out how to lead people through that because it was having the inverse
right.
effect on me.
That's interesting.
Mm.
Wow. I never thought about the impact that our own like self-talk, what we're saying to our trainers or whoever, how that could be translating
to them and for them, their own selves.
Yeah. Wow, it's that's osmosis. Powerful. If you have, you're around people who are constantly kind of complaining about their bodies,
it makes you kind of start thinking or applying that to yourself.
It does. It does. I don't know if you remember in the movie Mean Girls, there is this scene where the plastics are all complaining about something. And then they look over to Lindsay Lohan and she's like, what? I've never, you know, what do you mean? And then she starts to kind of pick up on that. I feel like I had so many moments like that where I was like, oh, I guess it's my turn to say something bad about myself. Like, what?
Wow.
And so I ended up kind of exiting those spaces because it just wasn't
good for you.
Healthy for me. Yeah. And it wasn't helping them get any healthier either.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, good for you for knowing when it was time to remove yourself from that and that it wasn't like a healthy space. And thank you for sharing that. That is that's fascinating. I never really made that connection between the two.
You've said the hardest part of fitness isn't the workout, it's the negative self-talk, which I agree with. I feel like once I start working out, I'm fine. It's just, you know, what I tell myself leading up to it. In this new season of your life, are you over wellness culture? And how do you define health now compared to the balanced berry days?
I'm in such a different place when it comes to wellness because while I still deeply care about wellness and prioritize wellness, now I like to do it and I'm not as interested in talking about it in the ways that I used to be, which is opposite of how I started. I said earlier when I started my journey as a blogger, I was looking for other people to talk about these things with because I was so excited and I was so interested and I was scouring the internet looking for ways to talk about these things. And now I'm like, yeah, I want to do it. I want to embody it. You know, my daily workout is still important to me. Yeah. Eating well is still important to me. I do it and then I move on.
Yeah.
I'm not consumed by it in the same ways that I used to be.
Yeah. Well, it's a difference. It sounds like it's just a part of your life now versus like a thing that you have to focus on.
Yeah. It's not an identity anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of things, I think the internet contributes to this a lot too, where people will take one thing and make it their whole personality.
Right.
Are you a Pilates princess? Can you just do Pilates and then go on about your day? Does it have to be our whole personality?
Yeah.
Do we have to embody a whole identity? Now, if it helps you to do it, great. If that helps you to be consistent with it.
Right.
And also, you can just do it because you like it and then go on about your day.
Yeah, because we're more than just that thing.
Exactly.
So just out of curiosity, I have to ask, what are your like go-to workouts? What are the things that you enjoy most?
Yeah, I've gotten my workout routine down to a science.
Okay.
A perfect science. I usually like to work out about 5 to 6 days a week.
Okay.
With that, I will do about 2 days of heavy strength training and conditioning. I will usually do bar strength once a week. I will do a Pilates class once a week. And then I will have a day for like dedicated zone 2 cardio and mobility. That's usually my core weekly flow. If I'm really feeling froggy, then on the weekends I'll throw like a yoga class in there I want some extra movement or I'm feeling really energized. But that has been for me like the perfect balance.
Yeah I love that. So I'm pretty similar. So I do like heavy strength training about 2 to 3 times a week. I try to do Pilates about once or twice a week, and then, you know, sprinkle in some cardio. I'm definitely less cardio these days than I used to be. I felt like it was always cardio, but again, there's a balance with it. All right, so we live and we learn.
Your IG bio caption says, living the life I used to journal about. I love that. Can you describe for us what that life is?
Yes, when I was in my 20s, I worked in a very rigid corporate environment. I had a super long commute in the office 5 days a week because everybody used to be. I know people, you know, younger people who have only entered the workforce over the past couple of years may not believe that, but that was
the thing. That was normal.
Everybody did it. Everybody. And I remember one time taking like an afternoon off to go meet a like executive coach or kind of mentor person that my company had provided, and going to another part of town based on where her office was, because the company that I worked at had offices all over the Seattle area. So I ended up like leaving my office to go to another part of town where her office was. And we ended up meeting in a coffee shop right outside the office. And I remember it was the middle of the day and I saw people like working on laptops and just easy breezy throughout the day. And I remember thinking, I want to be one of these coffee shop people. Like, that planted such a seed in my head. I want to be one of these coffee shop people. Or another moment that I'd had in my 20s when I still had that same job was our company always shut down the week between Christmas and New Year's. And I used to have a really long commute and I had to be at work really early. Mm-hmm. So I would usually wake up around like 4 a.m., go to the gym, commute up to work, which was like a long drive to be at my desk by like 6:30 in the morning.
Oh, wow.
And so especially during the winter, like I didn't see the sun. Mm-hmm. And I remember that week between Christmas and New Year's being in my little apartment at the time, which was like this cute little apartment facing east right over Lake Union in Seattle and seeing the sunrise. And I'd lived in that apartment for over a year and I'd never seen the sunrise before. Oh my gosh. I didn't even know how good of a view I had.
It's like those small, those little things.
Yeah, because I happened to be home at, you know, 7:30, 8 a.m. when the sun is coming up during the winter. Yeah. And I was like, I want to be able to actually see this each day. And so those were little seeds that I'd planted of like, I wanted to have a life where I could be a coffee shop person, where I had enough control over my schedule to actually be able to see the sunrise in the morning. I wanted to live in a bigger city. I wanted to work for myself doing something more creative. And I had this moment about a year ago where I had like a very average day and I realized all of those things were my very normal
day. You were living it.
And 10 years had gone by and I realized all of these things that I so badly wanted at one point are so beyond regular to me now. Yeah. And I was like, wait a minute.
I love that.
This is
You're
exciting.
Coffee.
I'm a coffee shop person who creates my own schedule and who sees the sunrise most days because I'm not in a windowless office anymore. Yeah. And it was just such a surreal moment that, yes, there's still things that I aspire to have and that I want. And it's foot's not coming off the gas anytime soon. But I also still appreciate that where I am right now was so badly where I wanted to be at one point, and I can still appreciate it while I'm here.
Yeah. So, I mean, so much. So, I mean, just like it sounds so simple, like appreciating seeing the sunrise or, you know, seeing that from your apartment, like that is a big deal, you know, when you stop to think about it. And I also am a believer in two things can be true at the same time. So being able to sit and appreciate where you are now, and this is the life that you had dreamed of 10 years ago, and still be looking for like, what's the next thing that's that 10 years from now you'll look back on and say, oh my gosh, I'm here. So that is amazing. I'm excited.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. So our last question. You are a media mogul, a wellness pioneer, and a guide for so many women who make their own luck. But when the headphones come off, what do you want people to know? You are more than a blank. Fill in the blank for us.
I am more than a talking head that lives in their phone.
That's a good one.
I am a whole person who cracks jokes and makes mistakes, and I'm a friend and a sister and a daughter and an auntie.
Yeah.
And I have more gas in the tank, and I'm just getting started.
I love that. Well, I believe you're just getting started, and I'm excited to see what's next for you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. Before we go, remind people where they can find your podcast, your work, all the things that you're doing.
Yeah, definitely. So She's So Lucky, new episodes come out every Tuesday wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, Apple, YouTube. I'm on Instagram at Les Alfred, and then I'm also on Substack. I have a Substack called The Lucky Playbook, which is probably my most personal platform. It's actually not really related to the podcast per se, but when I mentioned just now having more gas in the tank and knowing that there's more potential that I plan to reach, my Substack, The Lucky Playbook, is where I'm documenting that process to really reach my highest potential, and I share things on that platform that aren't really anywhere else. So,
I follow you on Threads and Instagram. I'm going to have to check out Substack.
Thank
you. I listen to your podcast. So I'm a fan and just love your work. Thank you for inspiring. Thank you for sharing and being so vulnerable. And thank you for joining us.
Thank
we really
you for
appreciate
having
it.
Me.
Thank you.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. It calls to us. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives richer, calmer, and frankly, better. Despite all this, We often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby or trails worth traveling to and explore confidently with offline maps and on-trail navigation. Whether you're looking for a laid-back walk with family or something more adventurous to get your heart pumping, AllTrails gives you the tools you need to get out there and find your outside. Download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.